Welcome to Around and About Chattanooga. I'm your host, Michael Edward Miller. On today's show, we're talking about the White House, radical Islamic ideology, and journalism with Dan Lothian. Lothian is a nationally recognized reporter who has more than 30 years' experience covering politics and foreign policy. He was with CNN for more than a decade and spent several years as the network's White House correspondent. These days, he owns Dan Lothian Media, a company that develops content for TV, radio, and the web. He also covers religion and ethics for PBS. Last year, Lothian produced a PBS report about recruiting radical Muslims and examined why people join extremist movements.
However the Quran is interpreted, radicals are finding new recruits in the U.S. and around the world, and social media is expanding their reach. Professor Ali Asani, who heads Harvard's Islamic Studies Department, says the appeal may defy logic, but to the right audience, it makes sense.
It's very easy for people who are marginalized to instrumentalize religious ideas, because very often religious traditions do talk about good versus evil, right? But it's just a question of who you define as good and who you define as evil.
Some argue many of these young recruits lack a deep understanding of Islam, religious illiterates who are searching for a cause greater than themselves.
Today on Around and About Chattanooga, I'll speak with Dan Lothian about recruiting radicals. We're also going to talk about how Lothian began his career. His first job was right here in Chattanooga at WDEF Channel 12. Lothian stopped by our studios while he was in town speaking with students at the University of Tennessee at Chattanooga. Dan Lothian, thank you for speaking with us today.
My pleasure.
In May of this year, you did a story for PBS about recruiting radical Muslims. Radical ideology has been in the news quite a bit lately after the November 13th attacks in Paris that killed more than 100 people. I'm going to read something President Obama said at a very recent news conference. He said, quote, "One of the challenges we have in this situation is that if you have a handful of people who don't mind dying, they can kill a lot of people. That's one of the challenges of terrorism. It's not their sophistication or the particular weaponry they possess, but it's the ideology they carry with them and their willingness to die," unquote. So as I was saying, in May of this year, you did a story for PBS about recruiting radical Muslims. You looked into that ideology.
Right,
you looked into
right.
that willingness to die. What did you find out about that?
Well, you know, I think, you know, what the president said is only half right. I think that there is this this sector of society out there who is willing to do anything at any cost, including giving up their own lives for a group. And in this case, it's ISIS. And we see what they're doing. And the story that we did focused on how young people are being pulled in. And we think oftentimes that these are sort of disaffected kids from poor families who have no future ahead of them. And so therefore they fall into the hands of these radicals who giving them suggestions of this better life can pull them onto the front lines. But what we found is that it's happening in suburbs all across the country where kids are having contact with these groups through social media, and they might be picked on sometimes in school, and they are not the big stars, and all of a sudden someone starts telling them, you can be a big star, and you can make a difference, and all you have to do is come and join us. And you're finding some of these kids who are coming from really great, strong families, hopping on planes and going to the front lines to support terrorism. And I think that's disturbing. Now, the part where I think the president only had it maybe half right is that where it did start out as sort of this ragtag group of people who can pop up anywhere, and that certainly is part of it, but it's getting more sophisticated now. And we now are hearing of how Russia believes that, yes, these groups were behind this bombing of an airliner. They clearly worked together with someone to get sophisticated materials onto a plane to bypass security and to blow a large plane out of the sky. That is more than just a couple of people running around. That requires some level of professionalism. And so I think that's the area of concern now.
So what do you think that we can do? You even talked to somebody who used to be heavily involved in the radical ideology and then got out of it.
Yeah, and I think, you know, if we had the magic answer to that, then I think we wouldn't have a problem, right? And I think it begins at home. I mean, you have a strong, I know I just finished saying that you have great families and these kids are still doing this, but there has to be a real effort by not only families, but communities in general to instill in our young people that there are a lot of things out there that you'll see online and there's a lot of information that flows on the news and it may seem enticing, but don't believe it. Right. And help them to focus on the reality of this life, which is you can be a good person. You can get up in the morning. You can work your job. You can still be very productive. At the end of the day, you can be special in your own right. And you don't need to go to extremes in order to get attention.
If you're just tuning in, I'm speaking with Dan Lothian, former White House correspondent for the CNN. Let's talk about the White House.
Yeah.
You were with CNN for more than a decade. And you got to directly interact with President Obama on a regular basis. I mean, for a lot of reporters, I think that would pretty much be the pinnacle of the career. Why did you decide to move away from that eventually?
Well, I think, you know, for several reasons. First of all, my family was living in the Boston area, and I was commuting from Boston to Washington every single week. So Friday nights, I would fly back from Washington, and Sunday nights, I'd head back. And my kids were getting a little bit older, and I was missing a big chunk of their lives. But secondly, it is it's a wonderful job, the most difficult job that I've ever had to do. But at some point, you want to try something else. And I had initially signed up just to do one term, and I ended up doing one. I came in right at the end of the Bush administration, then worked the first full term of the Obama administration, and then 1 year into his second term. And I wanted to transition into having my own show. And thought that was going to happen, and it never did. And so after that, I wanted to essentially start over, to reinvent myself, and to be back home again with my family, and also to get a little bit more control of my life. And I work a lot harder than I've worked before in running various businesses, but at least I'm the keeper of my own clock, and that's worth a lot.
What were some of the most interesting moments covering Obama like that?
Well, I think every moment, every day that you walk through that gate at the White House and you have your hard pass, which is a pass that takes six months to get, where they do a full background check and you can walk right through the gate. Every day that you do that, you kind of pinch yourself, and that's pretty amazing. I think traveling with the president around the world was an amazing experience. Going to places like Myanmar, which it was the first time that a U.S. president had a chance to go there. And frankly, it was a closed country and not a lot of people had been there. And I remember flying in and having the plane that we flew in on, we had to carry our own tow bar because they didn't have tow bars there to push those big planes. And then come getting on the bus and driving out of the airport, and all of the kids from all across that country had on their uniforms and were waving American flags, the emotion of that. I mean, there are a lot of memories along the way as we were covering the president or going up to Normandy and other places around the world that we went when the president went to Saudi Arabia and did his speech to the Muslim world in Egypt. Those are stories that are memorable.
What are some of the frustrating aspects of covering the president? Because I know when you question a politician, you don't always get an answer that's even remotely close to the question you ask.
Right. What you get are talking points. And I think that's the biggest frustration is that the White House, clearly each day they have a messaging machine and they try to steer coverage toward whatever it is that they want to highlight on that particular day. And our job is to not fall into that trap, but cover and pay attention to the issues that we believe truly are important and that people care about. And sometimes the two don't align. And so it's a challenge. I mean, sometimes in order to get the information that you need to cover a story of the White House, you have to go outside the White House and you have to talk to sources up on Capitol Hill. There are a lot more people up there, and some of them have more reason to want to talk about what's going on internally at the White House. But that's typically the route that you have to take to get at some real information, because you won't necessarily get that all the time at the White House.
How successful were you at getting Obama to kind of go off script and really speak his mind, speak his heart, and go beyond those talking points?
I think very few people are able to do that. And sometimes you get lucky. Sometimes you get lucky and it becomes controversial. And I had one of those in a press conference that when you Google my name, it always pops up and people ask me about this. But we were in Hawaii and there was a press conference there. And at the time, President Obama had not commented on, this was leading up to the 2012 race, and he had not commented on any of the Republican hopefuls. He said that he was going to wait until Republicans had picked their nominee before he would comment. And so the strategy in my question was to get the president off his talking points, which is I'm not going to comment on, and have him say something about the Republicans. And so I posed this question in the form of multiple choice, asked him when it came to waterboarding, which he stated was illegal. How did he feel about these other two candidates, Republican hopefuls, who said that it was legal? And I said, are they basically misinformed? Are they out of touch? You know, all negative choices that I gave him. And it caught him off guard. And he kind of smirked a little bit. And he said, well, that's a multiple choice question. And I said, yes, Mr. President, it was done that way for a reason. And he pauses a little bit. And then he says, well, they're just flat wrong. And that was a headline in the New York Times the next day, and the president had made news. It was the first time that he had commented on the Republican field. But I took a lot of heat for that question because there were conservatives who thought that that was an easy softball question to the president. They ascribed all kinds of political meaning to that question. And really, just at the heart of it was just Dan Lothian trying to get the president to answer a question without falling back on his talking points.
Your very first assignment was right here in Chattanooga at WDEF. What did you learn working for Channel 12 that prepared you for an assignment like the White House?
Just about everything. I mean, everything is a stepping stone that gets you to the next level and then the next one, and eventually you end up somewhere. And for me, it was at the White House. My first story, you're right, happened right here. It was a story at Erlanger Medical Center. They had just gotten their Life Force helicopter, and that was a big deal. And that was my very first story. It took me a long time to write this minute 30, I think, piece. And I was nervous and sweating the whole way. But what working at Channel 12 did for me is it allowed me the opportunity to try a lot of different things and make some mistakes away from the glare of a bigger market. And I learned about what it took to find good stories working on the assignment desk. I learned about what it took on a weekend when there was no news at all to find news and put together a newscast. I learned how to use natural sound in my stories and how to have an eye for the right kind of video that you needed. I learned how to edit some of those pieces. And I learned about, from a very good news director at the time, about some of these ethical lines. And you learn things, obviously, in college. But there was a news director who was very good in making sure that we stayed out of trouble. But yeah, we're very aggressive in pursuing our stories.
That's Dan Lothian, a journalist who covers religion and ethics for PBS and was the CNN White House correspondent for 5 years. We'll have more after the break.
Funding for WUTC comes from the North Shore Merchants Collective, a coalition of small, local independent businesses with shops, dining, and arts available on Chattanooga's eclectic North Shore. On Facebook at North Shore Merchants Collective.
Support comes from Cumberland Trust, professionals committed to preserving, protecting, and providing for the financial future of families. Cumberland Trust, building relationships with financial advisors. Details at cumberlandtrust.com.
Support comes from Elliott Davis DeCosmo, an assurance, tax, and business advisory firm committed to making a positive impact on their clients, their people, and the Chattanooga community. More information at elliottdavis.com.
You're listening to Around and About Chattanooga. I'm Michael Edward Miller. Today, I'm speaking with journalist Dan Lothian. He was with CNN for more than a decade, and he spent several years as the network's White House correspondent. These days, he owns Dan Lothian Media, a company that develops content for radio, TV, and the web. He also covers religion and ethics for PBS. Lothian has a master's degree from American University in Washington, D.C., His undergraduate degree came from Tennessee Temple University. Temple was a private 4-year Christian university located here in Chattanooga. It opened in 1946 and closed earlier this year after decades of dwindling enrollment. The school had a reputation for being very, very strict. Throughout much of its existence, students adhered to strict dress codes, avoided going to movies or rock concerts, and had to bring chaperones along on dates. In the second part of this interview, I'm going to speak with Lothian about his experiences at Temple University. We'll also talk about the role of the media in the upcoming presidential election. These days, you're covering religion and ethics for PBS. You went to Tennessee Temple here in Chattanooga.
Yeah.
What was it like? It has a reputation, Temple, for being very strict, or it had before it closed down.
Yeah, it was very strict.
What was it really like?
Well, it was a blast. I have two of my best friends to this day I met at Tennessee Temple. And what I liked about Tennessee Temple at the time was that we had a very strong broadcast program. There was a professor there called Marvin Easley, who, I mean, based on the other kinds of professors that we had there, he was pretty cool. He was hip. And so I enjoyed working with him. He had a great radio voice, and he taught me a lot about broadcasting. And the environment was, it was creative. Even, you know, you look at that school, and those who know Tennessee Temple see it as a place where people go to become preachers or missionaries. But the broadcast program at the time was robust. And we had a chance to try a lot of different things, and that's what I took away from it. I was able to not only work at the local station on campus, WDYN, but also in some local stations here in town at the time, WMOC, WZRA. I would do some stringing for WGOW as well. So I fully saturated the market to get experience that eventually led me into television.
And now that you're covering religion and ethics for PBS, or, you know, if you're covering religion for any news outlet, you've got to, I guess the word is neutral, maybe, be really neutral in your coverage.
Right.
You can't go into it with the attitude of, well, this religion is right and this one is wrong.
Right. No, well, I think it's the same way like covering any other kind of story. There are times when I go to cover a story. I was talking to someone about this the other day, that I covered a story interviewing here in Chattanooga, actually, when I was Channel 12, I covered a story with a skinhead who was using the N-word, and I'm African-American, and I'm interviewing him. Do I agree with what he was saying? No, but I was covering a story. It was a big story. It was the first time someone like that had spoken on our air. And so I think it's the same thing like that with religions, religion coverage. Clearly, I have certain beliefs. I have a certain value system that guides me each day, but I'm there to observe and to report and to present, and that's what I do.
So what are you doing now besides PBS?
So I do a number of things. First of all, I have a website that I co-founded with two other partners called heartbeings.com. Instead of human beings, it's heartbeings. These are people who follow their passions and do positive things. It's a positive impact website where we have videos, we have a podcast, we have articles, and we're really trying to build that into a community whereby people can come and learn about things that they can do to have a more impactful life. So that's one project. I also invest in a company called the Texas Law Book, which focuses on providing hard news information to business lawyers in the state of Texas. But my media company, which part of that is doing reports for PBS, also does a host of other things, such as pitching documentaries, doing corporate videos, and helping startups with messaging and any kind of consulting services from my years of experience in the news business.
With the next year's presidential election ramping up, what do you think of just the political coverage of that so far, the election itself, the Republican candidates, the Democratic candidates?
Well, it's been fun. People ask me if I miss it. And sometimes when you look at covering Donald Trump, that would be kind of fun. But I think, look, there's a lot that can be said and a lot that is said about Donald Trump. In fact, there's a lot that he says. But the one thing I would say to his credit is that first Republican debate, which was watched by many millions of people, typically when you have that many people in the race that early in the political season, no one would be paying attention and tuning in to a Republican or whatever debate at that point, because it's just too early. It's too soon. And so more, for whatever reason, people are tuning in, whether it's for entertainment, whether it's to they truly believe. Donald Trump has stirred and pushed certain buttons that has made something that typically was a tree falling in the forest now gets a whole lot of attention. And he has drawn attention to certain issues that we haven't been discussing in the public place now for a little while. And so I think it's exciting that at least it appears that people are being engaged in a way that maybe they haven't in the past. At the same time, though, I do worry that it has there's a lot of theatrics. It almost seems as if we're watching a reality show about a presidential race. And I know, Donald Trump supporters would not think so and would criticize me for saying that. But I worry that that we've gone down that entertainment road a lot. And you see that by some of the questions that are asked, at the debates. It's always toward that end, and when there are a lot of serious things going on. Having said all that, I think you're going to see a shift because with what has been happening in France, I think people are looking at this and saying, oh, no, I mean, this is real. And it's not just about throwing out names and giving little trite statements, but the commander in chief is someone who has to deal with some really heavy duty issues. And the next president will be facing these things, and lest we forget that there are all these years separating us from 9/11 and some of these other things happening in far-flung corners of the world. These things are still very real, happening in places in big cities like Paris, France.
What do you think the role of the media is in fact-checking, particularly something like when you're reporting on a debate? Because it seems like they will fact-check it, but they always do it in an article that's very separate from their main article about the debate, where they say, oh, by the way, here's the things that they said that were just not supported by facts at all.
Right. And I think every network tries to have various segments of fact-checking, but I think sometimes it ends up being a little bit like a newspaper says something and then has to, retract it, and they put the correction on section D, page, 50, wherever, way back in the back. And so people oftentimes don't really pay too much attention to the fact-checking. One thing I will say, though, is that social media has allowed the public to do some fact-checking of their own, right? And so you see that with, for example, this is not in the political arena, but we saw what happened with Brian Williams, where he clearly had been bending the truth for quite a while and probably would have continued to do that had it not been for the story and the comments that were posted on Facebook. And then all of a sudden, the people who were there saw it, said something on Facebook, and then it sort of took off from there. So where before people really waited for and expect the traditional media to fact check for them, there are so many places now where you can fact check on your own. Now, some of it may not be the right kind of, because you can grab stuff where people make up their own fact check. But still, there's this vast array of information out there at the fingertips of the general public.
Is there anything else you want to say?
No, thank you for this interview. I've enjoyed my time here on the campus of University of Tennessee at Chattanooga. It's a wonderful experience, and people always ask me, why am I here? And part of it is I love sharing my experiences. I've had a lifetime of a lot of interesting things. I can talk about some of the hurdles, the mistakes that I've made. But also, there's some real-time information that I can pass along as I'm building these new enterprises and say, hey, it's not that old media that I'm talking about. It's new media, what you will be facing in a few months or years after you get out of here. And so I can help you along in real time as I'm going through these things. And then the final thing is, it's not just about me helping or providing encouragement or information for young people, but it's also a two-way street. And I receive a lot of insights from being around young people, and you look at things a different way. And it's the millennial generation that approaches life in a much different way, and I like to be close to that to see exactly what's in their heads.
Dan Lothian, thank you so much for speaking with us today.
Thanks for having me.
That was Dan Lothian, a former CNN White House correspondent who now covers religion and ethics for PBS and owns Dan Lothian Media. And that's it for A Roundabout Chattanooga. I am your host, Michael Edward Miller. If you're on Facebook, look us up. You can find us at facebook.com/WUTC88 or just search Facebook for WUTC.
A Roundabout Chattanooga is a production of WUTC with contributions by the staff and volunteers of WUTC. Find us online at wutc.org.